Understanding the concept of mindfulness. What is it exactly, and why is it growing in popularity? Mindfulness has gone mainstream. Professional sports teams have mindfulness experts work with their players. Corporations hire mindfulness experts in hopes of increasing employee morale and productivity. Celebrities like Anderson Cooper and Dan Harris promote their meditation and mindfulness practices enthusiastically. But like many things that are popular, mindfulness means different things to different people, and there are plenty of skeptics. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss the concept of mindfulness with two experts who have been teaching and practicing it for a long time. They'll discuss what it means and how they believe it can help anxiety, relationships, and even healthy eating. Maine Calling tries to stay in the moment next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Just a few years ago, the term mindfulness was not well known, or maybe for you it conjured up images of flowing robes and meditation. Well, today, mindfulness training has permeated workplaces, schools, and even the world of professional sports. What is it about being mindful that helps people achieve their goals? And can it help you with some of those New Year's resolutions? With me in the studio today, Susan LaBelle Young. She is an author and therapist who teaches mindfulness as well as yoga. And her background is in counseling. And with us, Nancy Hathaway, a relationship counselor, mindfulness instructor, and ordained lay pastor in the Buddhist tradition. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you tried mindfulness techniques such as meditation, or do you just believe it's just a fad? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to both of you. Sue, I'll start with you. Define mindfulness.
Well, thanks. Well, first, thank you for having me. It's such an honor to be here. Mindfulness in everyday parlance is defined as, one way to say it is, knowing what you're doing while you're doing it. Really being aware of your inner experience and what's going on around you in the present moment without judging any of it as right or wrong. And also with purpose and deliberately, rather than just like if I clapped really loud, my attention would get, or your attention might get drawn there. But on purpose means we're really training the mind to be in a place where we are, so the mind doesn't time travel. So it's present moment awareness with judging anything as right or wrong or good or bad.
Okay. Nancy, the idea of mindfulness comes from the Buddhist tradition, or does it have different roots?
Well, it does come from the Buddhist tradition. It comes from the basic Buddha's first discourse on what's called the Four Noble Truths. Shall I tell you what those
are?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. So
the first noble truth is that life in itself has discomfort. We do have pain. We do have discomfort. We do things are presented to us that we're not interested in. The second truth is that suffering is caused from wanting things to be different than the way they are. The third truth is that there is a freedom from suffering. There is a way out of this suffering. So first I should say the first truth is pain. The second truth is suffering. So pain is a given. Suffering is a choice. The third truth is freedom from suffering. And the fourth truth is an eightfold path that shows us the way out of suffering. And the eighth one on that path is mindfulness. And mindfulness underneath it has these teachings that are called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. So it's all set up for us. And the Four Foundations of Mindfulness are body, feeling, which means pleasant or unpleasant, and mind states and mind objects. And many people call the Buddha the first neuroscientist. So a person who, just like us, a human being, wanted to understand the meaning of life. He wanted to understand pain. He wanted to understand suffering. And so he spent his life, much of his life, trying to find that answer. And when he found it, he wanted to share it with other people because it was so helpful to him. He wanted to help other people. And so that's where mindfulness originally comes from. And then we have this wonderful person, Jon Kabat-Zinn, who started doing yoga and meditation in the 70s, and he wanted to bring it into a hospital setting. And after he got his PhD at MIT, brought it into the University of Massachusetts Medical Center, and they gave him, he called it the Stress Reduction Clinic, and they gave him a room not in the basement but the sub-basement of UMass. And he said to the doctors, please send down people who you can't do anything with, who aren't getting better. And so that was started in 1979, and from there, thousands of people went through his program, lawyers, doctors, therapists, childcare workers, people with heart conditions, and people were not only getting better, the quality of life was increasing, and I think from there, people just wanted to share it. So now he teaches the military. He teaches, when I talked to him last, which was about 2 years ago, and invited him to Maine, he said, I'm sorry, don't take it personally, but I'm off to Korea tomorrow, and then I go to China, and then I'm doing the military. So
right.
That's where the popularity, I think,
right.
came from.
Right. He managed to bring it to the rest of us, those of us in the Western world.
Exactly. Well, he took the culture out of the Japanese culture and the gray robes and brought it into our American culture.
Right. And in those days, he called it the Stress Reduction Clinic. He didn't use the word meditation. He didn't use the word yoga. And he wanted it to be accessible to a Western audience. He had studied Eastern traditions to manage his own stress and saw the relevance to Western culture, but was very careful. I did a lot of work at UMass, and I taught in that clinic for a while. We weren't allowed to use the word Buddhism. We didn't say yoga. We didn't say meditation. So
you didn't want to scare people off.
Well, because there's a certain lingo that does scare people off, and mindfulness is so basic. It's such an amazing capacity that we have as human beings to pay attention in a very particular way that can be trained and build skill around it. And so if it's seen as with all the lingo of Buddhism, a lot of people would say, no, thank you. But when it's seen as a way to reduce suffering and to come into a relationship with pain that doesn't ask us to cure it or take it away or figure it out. I mean, he really did ask doctors for the people that had reached the end of their medical rope, and doctors were happy to say, I can't help this patient anymore, and the person's really suffering because they have this life-ending illness. And so what mindfulness helps us do is see in us, the practitioners, and in other people, the part of them that's not sick, the part of them that's not wounded. So it was really important for him, and still is, to make sure we know that it's not difficult to do. It's not easy to remember to do.
But I was going to say, you say it's not difficult to do, but when
not.
I was listening to you right at the very beginning of the program, I was thinking about myself preparing for this program, and I was reading articles about mindfulness as I was mindlessly eating my lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And so, right. You know, the way we have habits throughout our day that I suspect are very hard to undo.
That's the point. That's exactly the point, that a lot of our habits are automatic. We're on automatic pilot a lot. And without this way of saying, okay, what am I actually doing right now? Can I stop? Can I pause to plan the next thing? Can I start observing what's going on? The skill isn't difficult. Remembering to do the skill is hard because we have these neural patterns, neural pathways that have taken us in the same direction for so long. So that's why it's a training. It's not like an insight, like, oh, yes, this would be a good idea. Stay in the present moment. It's more like, how do I do that? Which is often why it's taught in meditation, because you're sitting on the cushion. You're asked to watch your breath, be with your breath, feel into the body. And then the mind goes off someplace.
But you say it doesn't have to be meditation.
It doesn't have to be meditation. My dad learned it through the game of golf. How do you stay with this one shot that you're making right now and not worry about the shot that's coming up and not feeling guilty or shamed about the shot you just blew on the last hole? How do you stay right here just with this one shot?
So probably there are many people listening right now who do practice mindfulness without even knowing they're doing it, whether they play golf or whether they play a musical instrument or even maybe when one is cooking dinner and thinking about the order in which we're adding things to the pan.
It's not thinking, though. It's being there and feeling the knife as you cut. It's smelling the aroma of the herbs as you're cooking. It's the taste of the food. It's the how the chopping sounds. It's hard to talk about it without talking about thinking, but it's not thinking.
Being aware.
It's mm-hmm. going from the thinking realm into experiential. Mm-hmm. So the senses are very much focused on, like, right now, what am I seeing? What right now, what am I hearing? Right now, is there a taste? Is there a smell? What's the feeling? So doing that without thinking. So, for example, how would I like to be doing sort of anything, really, eating an apple? Do I want to think about the apple, or do I want to taste the apple? Do I want to think about the game of golf, or do I want to be in it and play the game of golf? Do I want to think about swimming, or do I want to actually feel the water while I'm swimming? So in this culture, we've been given a lot of gold stars for thinking, but we've missed the body and the actual experience a lot. And so now mindfulness, one of the reasons it's so popular, I think, and is because we're going into the body again, and we're listening, and we're hearing, and we're tasting, and we're smelling. And mindfulness is really just a word, you know, and it's popular these days. But there are different ways, different words that are doing the same thing.
Awareness, as you just said.
So what would you, if someone's listening right now and thinking, because I suspect there are those of you out there, I've thought about this, I've read about this, I just can't even imagine trying to be this, is focus the right word, or change my rhythm so much. Are there little things people can do to improve their state of being through mindfulness without sort of feeling like they have to adopt an entire life change?
Yeah. Sure. One of the things in mindfulness is to come into the body, because the body is always in present moment time. It can't be in the past. It can't be in the future. The mind will time travel, but the body's always right here. So you could start with, can you feel your feet on the ground right now? Can you feel the contact of your body, either wherever it's making contact with anything? I can feel my elbows on the table. I can feel my seat on the seat of the chair. I can feel my feet in my shoes. What happens when we come into the body like that, to actually feel from the inside what's happening, which means if I'm about to have a conversation, if I'm about to lose my temper, let's say, in a conversation, and I notice, oh, my heart is racing and I'm starting to sweat and I'm clenching my jaw and I'm making fists, like, oh, okay, I'm aware that I'm about to do that because I've come into my body. The body has a language, and the language is sensation. So if I start paying attention to how I'm feeling in my body, I'm in the present moment.
I would suggest, if people want to begin with mindfulness, to pick something, one thing in their daily life that they're already doing. It could be brushing their teeth, taking a shower, driving to work or school, and feeling, bringing the senses, like, how does the toothbrush feel on my gums? And can I focus on the feeling of it and notice when my mind drifts off and starts wandering off? And we talk about the wandering mind in mindfulness, that as human beings, we all have wandering mind. So that's normal. Oftentimes people think, oh, I want to get rid of my wandering mind. But mindfulness is not about that. It's about being aware of the wandering mind and then choosing, do I want to wander, or do I want to feel the toothbrush in my gums? Do I want to go with my wandering, or do I want to taste this vanilla ice cream? Do I want to wander, or do I want to do and be wherever I am right now? And so mindfulness is about coming back to, right, is it right now, what are we doing? Right now, what am I doing? So right now I'm talking to you on the radio. If my mind was wandering, it would be a little silly. The question can be, right now, what is this? Right now, what am I doing? And coming
I can
back
give you
and back to that.
A funny example. I used to teach mindful eating at a health resort in Hilton Head, and I would go for a week every two months and spend a whole week really helping people understand what does hunger feel like and what does satiation feel like, and are these foods neutral, pleasant or unpleasant, or do I have a neutral reaction to them, or what are my thoughts and feelings when I'm actually eating? These are people with sort of disordered, chaotic relationships to food and their body. So we were doing all of what Nancy was just talking about in terms of awakening the awareness in all realms, because when you awaken awareness, it has an effect where it's more holistic than just the one thing you're paying attention to. So this one woman was there, and we were doing all that work. We were about on the third day, and she came in the next day, and she said, so I was on the phone with my husband last night, and I said, you know what? I was in the shower, and I felt the soap, and I smelled the shampoo, and the warm water was incredible. And he wasn't there, and he hadn't studied mindfulness, and he said, what are you doing there? But it was a real awakening for her. She was eating when she wasn't hungry. She didn't know when to stop. You know, it's very, it can add to very, very powerful transformations in the way we live.
Well, let's talk about some of these transformations, because we talked about the use in a medical setting among somebody who might have chronic pain or be suffering from some terrible disease. But there are ways in which mindfulness can benefit us in sort of more everyday ways. And you were talking about it can help people who have eating issues. What are some of the other reasons people come to you? What are some of the other, here it is January, some of the New Year's resolutions people may have had that mindfulness could help them with?
Anxiety is a big one, because anxiety is worrying about the future. What if? Worst case scenario, what if this happens? Anxiety is a lot of chatter in the head, a lot of thinking, a lot of worrying. And so when you help people come into the present moment, is that thing happening right now? Can you pay attention to what's happening right now? No, that thing isn't happening right now. So kind of a practice of, wait, your mind is in the future. See what you're doing. You're already a month ahead of yourself worrying about the plane flight you're going to take. Let's come back to today. It's a training in coming back to the present moment. So anxiety is a big one.
But we have to plan for the future. We have to book airplane tickets, and you have to get booked for retreats in Hilton Head.
That's right. Yeah, it's not about not planning. It's about where's your mind.
So when you're thinking, just thinking. When you're planning for a flight, planning for the flight. When you're making dinner. But when you're making dinner, are you planning for the flight? And when you're planning for the flight, are you thinking about dinner? So it comes back to right now, what am I doing? Oh, I'm planning for the flight. Oh, right now I'm playing with my little two-year-old. So right now in this moment, what am I doing? And so often the mind will wander off into the future, to the past. And so mindfulness is about coming back to here now. But sometimes now means planning for the flight. And that's now.
Do you all practice it all day?
My intention is to practice it with every breath for the rest of my life.
I have that intention, and it's a real inspiration for me, and it's an aspiration for me. And I have to say I am often aware of how mindless I am. I just had an incident before I came here making a salad at Whole Foods and not paying attention to holding on to it. My phone rang. I went to get the phone. I spilled the salad all over the floor. Most of the time we're mindless, I would say, and it takes training. I feel better, I'm happier when I'm practicing. And the habit of the mind, because we have so many years behind us of being mindless, the habit of the mind is to go back into automatic habits and automatic patterns. So it takes it takes intentional focus, intentional practice. But yes, I mean, that's my intention, and no, I'm not always there.
Okay.
I'm teaching a class at Colby right now for the month of January, and actually the students are listening to this today as part of their homework.
And hopefully only listening and not also on their phones. Or
and eating.
And eating.
All at the same time.
So this morning we were talking about wandering mind, and our minds do wander, even though my intention is to be with every breath. It's like maybe once every, half hour or something. It's crazy because the mind wanders. But the power of having the intention of being present is extremely powerful. And you can see it in people just to keep coming back to right now.
I think another part of the definition, which is the non-judging part, is also, in addition to presence, the kindness and the acceptance is another big piece.
And I want to talk about that more, but we have to go to a break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Goggin Energy, committed to helping you stay warm and comfortable with heat pumps for your home. Turn on the power of nature. GogginEnergy.com.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Damien Chazelle, the writer and director of the new movie musical La La Land. It stars Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, has been nominated for 7 Golden Globes, and was named Best Film of the Year by the New York Film Critics Circle. Chazelle also made the film Whiplash, about a music student and his overly demanding teacher. Join us.
Tune in to Fresh Air tonight at 7 o'clock. Are you or someone you know interested in a paid broadcast-related internship position this summer? Maine Public has 2 positions for college or technical school students interested in careers in the news, journalism, digital news, and/or technical broadcasting fields. Candidates should preferably be attending an institution based in Maine or have an existing connection to the state of Maine. Application deadline is coming up January 13th. For more information, visit mainepublic.org and click on About and then Careers, or just contact Lisa Toner at 207-330-4506.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what it means to be mindful and how it can help you in your daily life. With me in the studio, Nancy Hathaway, who's a mindfulness instructor and relationships counselor, and Susan LaBelle Young, who's an author, a mindfulness teacher, and a yoga instructor. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with Willis, who's calling from Waterville. Hi, Willis. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, this is Louis DeVesto, and I was just wondering what the difference is between the awareness of mindfulness and simply just being more alert, like the anecdote of making the salad. How is being alert different from being aware?
Well, it's really how you perceive it. It's really about you. I mean, those are just really words. So it's about how we're living our life. And for me, aware, alert can mean the same thing. But if I'm practicing awareness and practicing alertness, what I'm doing is stretching my awareness or alertness. So I'm stretching myself to go to those places that I don't quite know. So when I'm making my salad, it's as if I'm making the salad for the first time. What does it feel like? What does it smell like? So it's really up to you how you're doing that.
I would say that's a really, really good question. And I do think it's the same. In a lot of ways, it's the same. If you ask yourself in any moment, where's my mind, that will help you to see, like, am I right here with what I'm doing, or is my mind somewhere else? And the word alert, the word aware, the word conscious, the word awake, there are lots of different words, as Nancy was saying, for mindfulness. And I think the caller has a couple.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, we'll go to Portland and Liam. Hi, Liam. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm an attorney and a mediator, and I've been using mindfulness in my mediation practice for about 10 years, both for myself and where I find it very helpful. If I start to get engaged in the drama, I've practiced enough, I think, to focus on what my body's doing and see how I'm getting enmeshed in the other people's drama. And I've also found that it's a fantastic behavior modeling technique.
Yes.
So as people are starting to get wound up, I'll engage in a mindfulness exercise briefly with myself. Things will calm down with my reactions, and people seem to calm down as well.
So you won't tell the people you're with what you're doing, but you'll just do that, and by your example, it will change the tenor in the room.
Yes, that's been my experience.
Absolutely. When I'm retired now, but I was a psychotherapist for 15 years, and there'd be times when a client would be getting ramped up and anxious, and I would literally wrap my foot around the chair that I was sitting in, feel my foot around the chair, make sure my feet were grounded, deepen my breath so that I would feel myself sort of unmoving in the middle of that, so I wouldn't get caught up in the emotional reactivity, so that I could actually be there and be like a container, like I could hold it without joining it. I think mindfulness is the practice of mindfulness helps us just be present with what's happening without necessarily reacting to it. So, Liam, exactly. Wow, can keep doing your great work. That's awesome.
Also, in mindfulness, what's really important is the second foundation of mindfulness, which is feeling. And so, as we practice mindfulness, we open up to and expose ourselves in situations while we're practicing to pleasant and also too unpleasant. So as we expose ourselves to even like anger, and we start to study anger, for example, not in the head, but how does anger feel in the body? So when anger arises, whether it's with a client or within oneself or with one's child having a temper tantrum, when we welcome it into the body, it's very different than if we cultivate it in the head and get the gerbil cage going. So the more we practice that, the more we can hold in our daily life. So if I welcome in anger, study it, practice it, then when I'm with someone, a client or my grandchild or my child, and they're having their own little temper tantrum, I don't get as I'm not as reactive. I have more space, so I can hold it.
It seems to me this is related to some of the things that we've learned throughout our lives about things like body language, that, you know, when you're talking to someone, not to cross your arms and hunch over, but to open yourself to them. Or, you know, I've read studies where people who force themselves to smile feel happier. Is it related?
The only way it would be related would be that crossing your arms sort of is protecting you. And mindfulness is really about practicing opening up so that we're welcoming in life, to be centered in the middle of life no matter what's happening, so we can stay centered in the pleasant and the unpleasant.
And a way that it differs, I think, a little bit is that mindfulness is not about curing or fixing or helping or changing anything. It's about noticing exactly what is. So that's the reason it's proliferated so much, because there are many, many modalities for taking people from where they are to where they're going, future thinking. They're all valid. This is a different model. Can we just be with what is and notice what it is without trying to change it or fix it? The irony is that sometimes when that happens, the thing starts changing on its own if you have this deep trust in the process. So anxiety, for example, if we say, okay, I don't want to be anxious, but I am. I'm accepting. I'm acknowledging that I'm anxious. I'm going to be right here with the anxiety. I'm going to breathe with it. I'm going to, Thich Nhat Hanh, a wonderful mindfulness teacher, calls it sponsoring the anxiety, being there, holding it. It will subside on its own. So the doing things on purpose with body language would be different from mindfulness.
Okay. Also, I think it's important to say that mindfulness, many people think that mindfulness is about being calm and relaxed. Mm. And actually, it's not. Mindfulness is about being present in our lives and welcoming in life. And when we do that, the side effect is that we become more relaxed and more calm.
It's not about walking around like a zombie.
No. And it's not trying so hard to be calm and saying, oh, I'm not being mindful because I'm not calm. It's not about that. It's about being in the middle of life and welcoming in life. And then when we start to lower our resistance to the unpleasant and become more comfortable with the unpleasant, then we can hold more of the unpleasant and we stay more centered.
You know, it's funny. I've taught mindfulness and meditation for a long time, and so many people say, I can't meditate. My mind is too busy. Like, that's the point. And in meditation, there are many, many kinds of meditation, and some are indeed to help us relax and help us be calm. Mindfulness meditation is The intention is attention, like where's the mind? And we train our mind to be present where we want it to be present. And so sometimes mindfulness meditation is the exact opposite of calm because the mind wanders and you bring it back, and the mind wanders and you bring it back, and the mind wanders and you bring it back, and you're exhausted at the end of your 15-minute meditation. But you've strengthened what we call the attentional muscle. It's like going into a gym and like, I'm going to lift that weight. I'm going to lift that weight again. I'm going to lift that weight again. And so what the saying is, there's no bad meditation unless you don't do it. You know, if you sit there for 15 minutes and you're bringing your mind back every single time, then that's a building of the skill. So it's not about always being calm, for sure.
Liam, thanks for your call. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-399-3566. We're talking about mindfulness on Maine Calling. Our email address, talk@mainecalling.net. Susan, I want to return to something you said at the very beginning that you said is one of the bases is to notice, and I'm probably phrasing this wrong, but when you notice things, when you are intentional, to do that without judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not just talking about judging other people.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about judging the smallest things we do.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that, don't we? We judge, and I've been trying really hard to use the word should less.
Mm-hmm. Stop shoulding on yourself.
Stop shoulding on my, you know, I should do this. Why do I say that? Why do we apply a moral
You've been trained.
Imperative
been trained
to the smallest decisions, you know, whether to use a staple or a paper clip or, you know, whether to have one thing for breakfast or another.
Mm-hmm. So the mind is designed to judge, it has to do that, right? We have to know this is safe, this is not safe. This is poison, this is not poison. We have to discern. We have to be able to discern right from wrong, good from bad. So when we pay attention, when they say without judging, what it also means is when we notice the judgment, can we not judge ourselves for judging? Because it's a normal activity of the mind. If you flip non-judging around so that you say it in a positive way instead of a negative way, it would be with acceptance or with kindness or with openness. That would be the opposite of judgment. Like, I know this is happening for me right now. Like, so this morning I was saying to myself, gee, I'm nervous going into this radio interview. And a lot of people said to me, you don't need to be nervous. You know, you have a whole lifetime of practice. And I said, I also need to embrace the nervousness. I also need to say, not judge the nervousness. I also need to say, of course you're nervous. You know, this is a big thing. So it's how to bring acceptance and kindness to the human condition. And not judging is a huge part of it. And it's a difference from the Western medical model, which is how I was trained as a therapist, to look for the pathology, to look for what's wrong, and to try to come up with a way to fix it. In mindfulness, we're looking for what's not wrong. We're looking for the part of the person that's not damaged. We're looking for what's right. We're looking for what there is to be thankful for, not in a way of positive thinking or changing our mind, but in a way of widening the picture so that we not only see what's unpleasant and what's not working and what we don't like, and also we see the larger whole. So doing those kind of acceptance practices, gratitude practices, help us see a bigger picture, which leads to non-judging.
Mm. I think what's helpful, sometimes it gets a little confusing. People will say, oh, but they just did that. You know, that's not good. But they did do it. So the more centered we are, we can respond or we can react. So with mindfulness, these words respond and react are used a lot. So respond means this is the way things are. What can I do about it? How can I respond from this place of centeredness? And react is reacting from automatic pilot or old habits to what is. So what is what is. And what can I do about it from a place of centeredness, mindfulness?
And we do use those words a lot. So the word response, if you strengthen it out to responsibility and have it be the ability to respond. When there's a stressor or something that happens in our life that we react to, we get into fight or flight or freeze. If we are responsive, if we're mindful, there's a little bit of space. We take a pause, we take a breath, we step back, we count to 10. Anything that puts some space in, then we have a choice about how to respond.
So if something negative happens, a reaction might be your blood pressure going up and feeling stress out about that.
Right.
But your response might be, I'm choosing to take a few breaths,
right.
maybe talk to someone about what I just heard
right.
before I decide
exactly.
what my next action will be.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And if it's a yes. reactivity reaction, the stressor happens and right away there's no space. Right away you react in an old way. And mindfulness might not use the word negative. A negative thing happened. They might say something unpleasant happened or something that I didn't want happened. And then
negative would be more of a judgment.
I see.
So yes. pleasant or unpleasant is more of an experience, because what might be negative to you might be something that's positive to me. So you would have a certain experience and I would have a certain experience, and then we would respond to whatever action.
Right. The one of the ways that stress is happens in the body is our interpretation of what's happening.
That's right.
So, you know, somebody might be late for dinner, and my way of thinking about it will be, oh, well, you know, they'll get here when they get here, and somebody else's will be like, well, that's rude. I can't believe that's happening. That person with the same exact experience would be experiencing more stress than I would.
All right. Food for thought during our next break. When we come back, more of our discussion about mindfulness. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Dirigo Pines in Orono, offering a spectrum of retirement living options on a 68-acre wooded campus. DirigoPines.com. And the Orthopedic Institute of Central Maine, providing joint replacement, spine surgery, and hip fracture care. JointsME.org. And coming up in our Public Affairs Hour at 2 o'clock, World Affairs welcomes Jonathan Tepperman, Managing Editor of Foreign Affairs, discussing Fixing the Impossible. Again, that's in our 2 o'clock Public Affairs Hour, coming up in 20 minutes here on Maine Public Radio. Many listeners who love classical music are happy these days around the Ellsworth, Blue Hill, Mount Desert Island, Machias, and Downeast areas, and even over in such places as Belfast, Lincolnville, and Camden. WRMO 93.7 FM is the latest FM frequency to join our Maine Public Classical Network, our growing classical network, joining our other stations in Portland, Bangor, Waterville, and Fryeburg. WRMO 93.7 is a strong signal if you live in the Downeast, Mount Desert Island, or Blue Hill areas, and beyond. Give it a try. You might be covered. WRMO 93.7 FM, now part of Maine Public Classical.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, approaching the new year with mindfulness. With me today, Susan LaBelle Young, who is a mindfulness teacher, a yoga instructor, and author, and Nancy Hathaway, a mindfulness instructor, relationship counselor, and Buddhist lay pastor. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Courtney, who's calling from Mid-Coast, Maine. Hi, Courtney. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you. I just wanted to say I started a practice of mindfulness just 5 minutes a day when I'm with my child, about a year ago, and I work full time and I have a child, and just making this intention to be with her and only with her, not in my mind at work or not on my phone, for 5 minutes a day has made such a difference for me.
Courtney, how old is your child?
She's 7 and a half.
7 and a half. And I'm wondering, are you teaching her mindfulness techniques, or are you focusing on yourself right now?
Well, both, but yes, I often talk through things out loud with her. So I'll say, you know, I'm feeling very stressed right now. I can feel my arms clenching. And in that way, I'm teaching her, I hope, through modeling.
That's awesome.
Yes, modeling, I think, is the best way to teach children about mindfulness. Children are really perfect just the way they are, and it's about us holding them and being present with them. And so even so it sounds wonderful, Courtney, what you're doing. And as that 5 minutes, I'm sure that it influences the rest of your time with her as a mother. And so I'm going to be curious about how I'm especially interested in emotional regulation and emotions. And think that as human beings, we all have emotions. And so children have so much to work out, and there's so much going on in their lives. So when a child has a temper tantrum, how do we respond to that? Do we react or do we respond? And can we hold the child in our arms and let them do their temper tantrum thing? Because that's really what mindfulness is about. We have our own temper tantrums. And can we accept them, like we've been talking about here? So I'm delighted. That's wonderful. Thank you for calling in.
And also, there's quite a bit online if you want to Google mindfulness and parenting. There's actually a lot. I did a course a while ago. I taught a course for parents. It was a 4-session course. It's called Time Out for Parents, which is the name of a book by Sherry Huber, C-H-E-R-I, Sherry Huber, inviting parents to take their own time out when they're acting in a way that gets them reactive. Instead of you go take a time out, it was teaching parents how to be mindful and how to care themselves. It's a pretty awesome book.
Also, Courtney, if you're still on, I have 2 websites. One's nancyhathaway.com. And under the menu, there's a section on writings, and they have an essay that got published by Shambhala Publications a number of times, and it's on parenting. And I actually love this essay, and I'd love to invite you to look at it. Also, it's called okay. I'm Breathing, Are You?
Thanks so much for your call, Courtney. We'll move to David, who's calling from Camden. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. A couple of things I wanted to add. This is an interesting discussion. It's a little touchy-feely the way you've been addressing it, so I wanted to bring in some masculine perspective.
Good.
Men don't touch and feel.
Good, good. Yeah, good.
We don't call it mindfulness.
What do you call it?
Other things. Yeah. Well, we can call it being in flow.
Oh.
We can call it being in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
We can call it Zen.
Mm-hmm.
Zen in the art of motorcycle maintenance, mm-hmm. then in the art of archery. It was Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he was a bodybuilder, said 5 minutes of mindful exercise is worth a half an hour of exercise listening to music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that always stuck with me.
Mm.
But it takes, I believe, I've been teaching photography for 30, 40 years here, and we're trying to get people past the mechanisms of the form so that the technology becomes intuitive and they no longer think about it when they're in the field with a camera. They no longer think about the camera.
So that it becomes their automatic default instead of automatically defaulting to distractibility. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, they can allow the muse to enter. They can allow themselves to be lost in the process of capturing pictures, whether it's with a person or whether it's a landscape or whether it's...
So, David, I'm wondering exactly what you're putting across to us. What are you thinking about?
Well, I'm thinking that mindfulness is something that requires some form of activity.
Attention. It requires attention.
Yes, it requires attention, no matter what activity you're doing. And you could be sitting still with attention and opening up your body to hear, see, smell, taste, and touch. And to feel the breath in your body. It could be as simple as that, or taking a picture and coming back to the photography, or, as we mentioned earlier, golfing.
When you say get lost in the picture, tell me more about what you mean by lost in the picture.
We refer to this, there's 2 forms of meditation.
There's lots of forms of meditation.
Yes, but the 2 I'm talking about.
More than 2.
Are quiet meditation, where you're by yourself and there's no activity.
We often call that formal meditation, and then there's the informal meditation, which means
on the
bringing
spot.
Mindfulness or bringing meditation into everyday activities, such as photography. And so when you're saying getting lost, I'm wondering if what you mean is you're getting so focused in the photography that you're losing your own sense of thinking, your own sense of self, so you become one with, as we say in Zen, and that's my background is Zen for 40 years, becoming one with the camera, becoming one with the photo.
Is that what you're saying?
One with the process.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Well, David, thank you for sharing. But, you know, we have lots of calls, so I'm going to move on. And I really, really, really want to ask Nancy about the work that you're doing with the inmate population. You're working with folks who are in a correctional facility.
Yes, I am. Working up in Belfast at the Recovery Reentry Program with guys who have had opioids in their lives or have been selling, and it's really interesting to watch them progress from wanting to be using to wanting to come back into their life and to be present with their children and with their families. And that's the sincerity that I see with them is so powerful. And they're also teaching us about early childhood and what children and what they didn't get in early childhood and what children need. And so this whole opioid crisis is tragic. However, there is something that I think we're learning from it, and that is that we can't medicate all of our pain away. And there is the pain of being human. And so mindfulness teaches skills on how to be human and also the joy in life. And it's also teaching us about how to invest in early childhood, and especially with emotions. So what I'm noticing in the prison is that in this recovery program, that emotions are seen as something that you push away somewhere else, and that it's not okay to have emotions. And so when this one resident, we started talking about anger, he said, "Oh, you've got it too." And I said, "Yes, of course I have anger." I said, "I'm human. We all have it. And the point is not that we have it or we don't have it. It's what we do with it." So we were studying anger and holding our anger and pausing on our anger before we react on automatic pilot and punch someone in the face. So if we can teach that to our children, that these emotions are part of being human, and help the parents also hold the children's emotions so that the children can experience their emotion in a very safe way, then they don't become afraid of it. And the emotion passes through more quickly, and we come back to right now, what is this?
I'm going to move on to Lewiston and Gerda. Hi, Gerda. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling. Gerda, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. And I didn't hear everything that has been said and might be somewhat redundant with my question. But my question is, how can mindfulness help us serve us to deal with the current, very current, greater political anxieties?
So I think, Gerda, I think a lot of people have strong feelings right now, one way or another. And it's really about holding our feelings. It's the same thing that we've been talking about, being aware of our feelings and our thoughts and being able to respond rather than react quickly from old habits, and to, I think, engage with people who think differently than we do and have compassion for each other, because we're, as human beings, we all want what's best for ourselves, and that's all really good, good needs that we have, and we have different strategies for getting there. And if we can engage and stay with each other, then we can have compassion for each other, and we'll be able to be friends and not enemies.
I think another thing is because mindfulness asks us to really get to know ourselves. If it's really true that I'm holding or you're holding a political view that's different from the political view that was just voted into power, how do we stay true to what we believe? So another part of mindfulness, after the noticing, after the witnessing, after the holding, after the being with, then there's skillful action. Then what do we do? So right now I'm offering a free mindfulness class at the Falmouth Library because I felt like I need to do something that continues to add peace in the world in some way that I can do. I continue to write. What would be skillful that you can do as a person that wants less darkness and more light in the world? And I know I laughed when David called because I wrote a book about mindfulness that was about my dad, and I had him read it. And he had me change a lot of the language because he said, "I don't talk like that. I know that's mindfulness, but I don't talk like that." And so the book is about him and golf and the lessons he learned in golf in his male sports-minded way. So, David, you were right on with that. Goethe, I think listening to your heart and being kind to yourself and doing what you feel would be skillful is right along in lines with mindfulness.
And you told us about one book, Susan, since you said that. You have two books, right?
I do have two books, and they're really both about mindfulness. The first one is a story of how I came to cope with a illness of my dad, who was my first hero and my first love, when I thought he was dying. So coming up against mortality and illness and suffering and my fears and my anxieties. So it's called Lessons from a Golfer, A Daughter's Story of Opening the Heart. And the other one is called Food Fix, Ancient Nourishment for Modern Hungers. And it's the story of using mindfulness and heartfulness, which is another way to say the word, to help heal really distorted, chaotic, frenzied eating, body image, body awareness in this culture. Sort of my story of coming through that, my story of helping others come through that. And at the end of every chapter, there are three different, very practical, in-the-world practices.
And what we'll do, Sue, we'll post links to the information about your books on the Facebook page for Maine Calling, and the same with the article you mentioned earlier in the program, mm-hmm. Nancy.
I also have Mindful Maine, which is a new nonprofit
organization. That's right, yep.
Yeah, and there's a new website that's just up, and also a way to put your email on there if you'd like.
So I just wrote a note to myself, what to remember to put on Facebook after the program for those of you mm-hmm. listening. We have just a little bit of time left, so I'm going to try to go to one more call, and it's going to be Willa in Portland. If you could be quick, that would be terrific.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I love your show. I have been a preschool teacher for almost 30 years, and I loved hearing what you had to say about young children. I find that the act of being a preschool teacher is one of mindfulness, and that's why I love it so much, because kids are in the moment, and if you can meet them where they are, life stays fresh, and the work with children is always exciting and new. So that's what I had to say.
I can imagine you're in trouble if you don't stay in the moment with a room full of preschoolers.
Right. I can give teachers a site. My daughter works for a wonderful group called Institute for Social Emotional Learning, IFSEL. And they have wonderful, wonderful readings, wonderful blogs, wonderful ways of helping kids with social emotional.
Also at the University of Southern Maine, Department of Education, in the summer, I offer a course, a one-week course for teachers, so they can get graduate level or credit courses, CEUs, and also at Lewiston Auburn campus, and the University of Maine in Augusta, actually, there'll be one this year, too. This
great,
summer.
Great. Well, this hour went way too quickly. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here. Nancy Hathaway is a relationship counselor, mindfulness instructor, and ordained lay pastor in the Buddhist tradition. And Susan LaBelle is an author and therapist who teaches mindfulness as well as yoga and has a degree in counseling. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling and a link to our archives at mainecalling.net.
Thank
Today's
you,
program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Keith Shortall will talk about the aquaculture industry in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.